You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. As I always say, I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Today is February 22nd, 2018, a lovely Thursday. The Shivratri festival concluded about 10 days ago, and in fact, there are so many devotees now in Prashantinilayam to celebrate the Chinese New Year. But Shivratri still lingers on in my mind, the bliss of that morning and the ecstasy of that evening, the Akhanda Bhajans. What is really ethereal in the morning of Shivratri is the boys chanting those mantras, each of them. So sublime, those words, those syllables itself. Quite in your senses, if you have been there in Shivratri, for the Shivratri in Prashantinilayam, and if you have been in the Sai Kulwant Hall, your attention focused on Bhagwan, and you soak in the bliss of these mantrams, wow, it is an experience that can never be described. For example, just imagine yourself sitting in Sai Kulwant Hall and listening to Bilvastakam.
त्रिदलं त्रिगुणाकारं त्रिनेत्रं च त्रियायुधं त्रिविजन्मपापसंहारं एकबिल्वं शिवार्पणं त्रिशाखैर्बिल्वपत्रैश्च अच्छिद्रैः कोमलैःशुभैः तव पूजां करिष्यामि एकबिल्वं शिवार्पणम् कोटिकन्या महादानम् तिलपर्वतकोटयः काञ्चनं शैलदानेन एकबिल्वं शिवार्पणम् काशीक्षेत्रनिवासं च कालभैरवदर्शनम् प्रयागे माधवं दृष्ट्वा एकबिल्वं शिवार्पणम्
So this mantram says that I offer the three-leaved bilva, signifying the three qualities. And these three leaves will destroy the sins committed in three births. It has three weapons, and I offer this to the three-eyed Shiva. Well, there are so many interpretations of this mantram. Somehow, this word three, what is stressed here, caught my attention. And I've heard Bhagwan say so many times that you are not one, but three. The one you think you are, the one others think you are, and the one you really are. And I thought, what does all this mean? How to understand this dictum of Bhagwan, this message of Bhagwan practically? And this led me to do some contemplation, and today I'm going to share whatever I have understood of this message of Bhagwan. You are not one, but three. So I'm going to share with you this journey from three to one in this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.
Embodiments of love.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విద్ ఇన్ నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్ ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
So welcome to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And today, The topic, as I mentioned, is the journey from 3 to 1. So what are these 3? And what is this 1? And what is this journey? And why should we make this journey? And how should we make it, if at all we have to make it? Well, that is what we will be discussing today. So let me begin with a story, a playful and yet very profound interaction with Bhagwan, which happened way back in the 70s. So this was in Vrindavan, and Swami then used to reside in the building which later came to be called as the Old Bungalow, currently Trey Vrindavan, where it stands is where the old bungalow stood in the 70s. The Trey Vrindavan came in 1986. So back then, the Sri Sathya Sai Art, Science and Commerce College for Men in Vrindavan, which Swami set up in 1969, had a very few students, and Swami would spend close to 9 months in a year at the Bengaluru ashram. And the opportunities that the boys received during that era were immense, and they had free entry to Bhagwan's residence compound throughout the day. And so one morning when Bhagwan emerged for darshan, 4 students stood in a row on his pathway. Out of the blue, suddenly Swami asked one of them, "A boy, who are you?" And this boy was zapped. Now, he tried to compose himself, a little bit taken aback, and he was unable to think much, so he just muttered, Swami, I'm a student of your college." Swami just nodded and he moved on to the next boy. "Tell me, who are you?" Now this next boy, he saw that Swami was not so pleased with the previous response, so he thought perhaps he should give a little more elaborate answer, maybe give extra detail. So he said, "Swami, I am from the state of Madhya Pradesh, and this is my name, and I have come here to study," and all that. So Bhagwan just heard him out almost quite disinterestedly, and again he moved on. Now his gaze fell on the 3rd student. "Hey, who are you?" Bhagwan looked into the eyes of this boy. And this boy thought, well, it is so clear that Swami is not happy with the previous responses. I have to say something which is from the heart, and I have to say something which I really feel. So he said, you know, he folded his hands in deep reverence, and with a lot of humility and sincerity, he submitted to Bhagwan, said, "Swami, I am your child." And when Bhagwan heard this, his face blossomed, there was a beautiful smile on his lips, and he patted the cheeks of this boy with much love, and then Swami said, "Good, good." And then still Swami was not done. He moved on. The questioning didn't stop. Swami now turned to the 4th boy and he asked the same question, "Who are you?" And this student thought, oh my God, so this means Swami was not happy even with the answer of the 3rd boy. So Swami perhaps is looking for something else. And then he suddenly recollected the discourse that Swami had delivered the previous evening, the public discourse. And in that Swami had mentioned about the concept of soham. Swami said that it means I am that. And Swami had said the whole universe is the manifestation of one principle, which is the ultimate principle. That is the source of everything. Nobody and nothing is different from that principle. So this is what Bhagwan had mentioned the previous evening. That was the essence of that message. And this boy was happy that, you know, suddenly he remembered this point. So he congratulated himself for his presence of mind, and he thought this is what will enable him to pass that test that Swami was putting through everyone that day. And so confidently he said, "Swami, soham, I and you are one." And the moment Swami heard that, Swami's face burst forth with a very quizzical expression. Swami said, "Oh, is that so? Oh, very good, very well then. Now, since I and you are one, why don't you go out and give darshan?" And there was a mischievous smile on Bhagwan's sweet face, and the boy didn't know how to respond. He was flummoxed. All his smartness had evaporated in a trice. He was lost. Now he thought, oh my God, how could I have done this with Bhagwan? You know, you are trying to outsmart God. So now he fell at Bhagwan's feet. He looked at him with pleading eyes and he sought his forgiveness for his foolishness. And now, when he did that, Bhagwan, with a lot of mercy, looked at him with all kindness, and Swami said, if you had really said what you said, not from your lips, but from the depths of your heart, if you really believed what you said with your heart, with your mind, with your soul, with your everything, then even if you had gone out to give darshan, all the devotees would have seen not you, but me. They would have seen me. But you should have that conviction in you. Swami said that, and Swami walked away. But that was a message which the boy never forgot for the entire life. I mean, that was such a powerful message to me. Swami, in that 3-minute interaction, has conveyed the entire essence of spirituality, the entire process of our spiritual evolution, the entire purpose of our being, the entire meaning of our existence, the entire reason why we are taking every breath. That is the blessing of living with the avatar. When God comes down in a human form and he walks and talks and he jokes and he eats and moves with you, what he can do to you in just 3 minutes is something unimaginable. Now, with this background, I try to understand, what does Swami convey to us when he says you are not one but three? The one you think you are, the one others think you are, and the one you really are. So if you take the first, the one you think you are. If someone were to ask me, okay, what do you think you are? Well, the immediate response would be the normal kind of answers. I am Bishu, I work in Radio Sai, I am short, yeah, I like to sing, I like to run. You know, what do you think you are? But is this me? Or someone else probably will say, okay, I'm a successful banker, I have this business, I have 2 children, I think I have made reasonable success I have seen in my life. Yeah, I can do more. Someone else will say, okay, I have so-and-so is my wife and this is my family. Someone will say, no, I have been a decent son. You know, different people will describe themselves differently, what you think you are. But is it what they are? Swami says, the one you think you are. So is this us? Is it what they are? If we move on to the next, Swami says, the one what others think you are. Now, is that what we are, what others think we are? Someone might think that I'm great in my work. Someone else might feel that I don't really match up to real professional standards. Another person might think that I am kind. A third person might feel that it is all show. Somebody might feel that I'm good looking. Another person might feel that I'm just average. Someone else might think that I'm a sports person, very good sports person. Someone else might think that, no, you're just okay. Someone else will think that I sing well. Another person will think that I am far from being an accomplished singer. So different people have different impressions and perceptions about each one of us, about me. So is that what I am? Is that what we are? The one what others think you are? And Swami says, the one you really are. That is the third thing. So what are you really? Well, Swami has said so many times that you are divine, you are God. So yes, probably that is what I am. But you know, I mean, I don't have that conviction that I am God. I don't get up every morning and think I am God, I am divine. I think the normal things. You know, I think that probably, okay, I have to get up and I have to get this done in my office. Or someone else might think that, okay, I have to do this for my wife. I have to bring this for my daughter. I have to make this investment for my son. I have to bring this medicine for my mother. I have to accomplish this in my job today. I have to do this for my boss today. I mean, all of these is what generally goes through in our mind, isn't it? And if you think, if you analyze a bit, what is all this? All this relates to our physical self, to our, to everything that is connected with what we described as what we are, which is basically, which is connected to our position, connected to our role in the family, which is connected to our profession. So basically everything that is connected with the body, isn't it? Everything that is connected to what I described of myself as the body. Basically, I mean, normally that is what we identify ourselves with, isn't it? We all the time identify ourselves with our physical self. And that's what Swami is saying. The one you think you are. Swami says that is what relates to your body. The one you think you are relates to your physical self. Relates to your profession, your appearance, your position. In fact, if you think, this is what most of the humanity does all the time, isn't it? When we live in an age where most of the humanity cannot think anything beyond their bodies. In fact, this is a body-obsessed age, the modern times, isn't it? The amount of time the current generation spends on how they dress, how they look, I think it's much more than it was ever before. How do I do my hair? Which shoe to wear and which tie to wear or which bag to carry? I mean, a youngster probably today may not have 15 minutes in the morning to sit down in front of the altar and pray, but he or she will easily spend 15 minutes in front of the mirror just to fix that one strand of hair which was not where it should be. I mean, that is what we are in daily life, especially in the current times, isn't it? Where everything is so much about the body. Every day we are flooded with all these pictures and images of what a great body is like and what somebody has achieved for the body, for the convenience of the body, for the comfort of the body. In fact, other day I read a news item which to me was a bit strange. The title of this news item said, "Immortality is the new IT." I was a little surprised. I mean, first of all, reading the word immortality, and that is connected with IT. So this article went on to talk about tech moguls. I mean, people who have made huge amounts of money thanks to technological innovations. And this article went on to say now how through IT, these people want immortality. I mean, when you think of it, Swami says removal of immorality is the way to immortality. But these techies are saying, forget morality, immorality. Remove morality out of the equation. You give me IT and I will give you immortality. So what they want to do is, through technology, they want to live forever. All of these people believe that by harnessing technology, they can definitely live longer. They can possibly live forever. And these are some of the brightest minds of the century. Larry Ellison, he's the co-founder of Oracle. His net worth is $52 billion. And he has founded this institution, the Ellison Medical Foundation, which has spent $430 million since 1997 on anti-aging research. And Larry Ellison says, "Death has never made any sense to me." I mean, how can someone be there today and not be there tomorrow? How can someone just vanish? We should just live forever. This is what he believes in. Look at Sergey Brin, Google co-founder. He's someone whose net worth is $39.8 billion and he has spent $150 million in firms which are researching human DNA. And what is his aim? What is his goal? He says, "Someday, I want to cure death." That is a goal. Cure death. Death is basically a disease which can be cured. So, and partly it's because Sergey Brin himself is susceptible to Parkinson's. There is a genetic mutation. He knows that possibly with time he can contract this disease. So he feels that through technology, if he overcomes this, then that's it. You know, he can have victory over everything that is perishable in life. Same with Larry Page, the other co-founder of Google. His net worth is $40 billion and he has founded this organization called Calico, California Life Company, which is engaged in anti-aging research. He has spent $750 million into this work. And again, just like Sergey Brin, Larry Page also has a disease and his is Hashimoto thyroiditis. It's again a very dangerous disease and, you know, it can be fatal. So he is thinking that if I can somehow beat this disease through technology, then, you know, then death will nowhere be anywhere near me. It is not only them. Even Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder, someone whose net worth is $56 billion. Now, he has instituted this $33 million prize for breakthrough sciences to cure age-related diseases. And he says, what I am most interested in is, what is it that will enable me to live forever? How to cure all these diseases? Because once that is done, then I will not die. Well, when I read this article and what all these people believe in, what is their philosophy? I mean, yes, it is great when they are trying to find cure for diseases. I mean, it might really help so many to lead better lives, to cure some of their problems. But what intrigues me is this belief of theirs that they can live indefinitely, that they can beat death through technology. IT will give them immortality. They believe that basically this body is just a bundle of organs and all you have to do is just, if an organ fails, just rebuild the organ. It's just like a car. Something fails in the car, go to the garage and, you know, change the part and the car will live forever. So it's the same with the body. So you just rebuild the body, you regenerate the organs and that's it. You will live longer, you will live better, you will possibly live forever. So use big data, use algorithms, maybe put a chip inside the body. You know, basically, just like you upgrade anything else, you can upgrade the human body, you reprogram the DNA, study how the tortoise lives for, you know, hundreds of years, how the jellyfish is able to reverse its age. So study these organisms who live long and see what is there in them that we can take and that's it. You can beat death. And these people, these techies, they are the idols for the current generation, for the modern techies of our times, for this tech-obsessed generation. And the message that is coming out is, man is just a body. I mean, you don't have to think anything beyond the body. You know, just do whatever the body wants. If something doesn't work in the body, just replace it. You know, whatever the body demands, you fulfill, you know, whatever the body asks, you give it, and something doesn't work, just change. And that's what human life is all about. That's what medicine is all about. That's what human being is. Biologists will say that man is a social animal. Sociologists will say that man is just a mere human. So all these things are coming because everyone is just identifying themselves completely with the body. You're driven by the body. You think you are the body. And that is what Swami says, the one you think you are. This is what relates completely to your physical self. Of course, the good thing also in that article, what I read, fortunately, not everyone subscribes to this idea. Another tech billionaire, Bill Gates, is not very impressed with this philosophy. He feels all these ideas of these rich people who are trying to seek immortality through technology is egocentricness. He says that instead of spending millions of dollars to cure that one problem that, you know, one techie has, okay, he's a genius. You can actually spend those millions of dollars to cure one problem that million others have. There are thousands suffering from severe life-threatening diseases. Imagine what you can do with this much money, with $750 million, with $450 million being spent in, you know, trying to cure one disease. So Bill Gates, he was not using the word egocentricness because they were identifying themselves with the body. He was using it to say that, you know, they are being so selfish. But actually, they are connected. They are selfish because they are identifying themselves with the body. they don't think anything beyond the body. In fact, at this point, I'm reminded of a very interesting incident that happened in the late 80s. Bhagwan had arrived to the indoor stadium. Then we had not the full-fledged Sri Sathya Sai International Center for Sports, which got inaugurated only in 2006. We had an indoor stadium which had a full-fledged gymnasium and as well as some table tennis courts and volleyball courts. And Bhagwan would come very often. We know how interested is Bhagwan in the sports activities of the students. So Swami would visit the playground. So one evening, Swami came into the gymnasium. So there were many young gymnasts who were toiling away at the horizontal bars, and Swami observed the way the boys were doing the workout, and he started advising them on various aspects, you know, about how to build their muscles, how to warm up before doing any exercises, you know, what to wear while exercising, the ideal way to build muscles and how to cool one's body, all that tips that Swami was giving. And so as Swami was speaking all this, you know, there was a contemptuous smile that was on one of the boy's lips. And this boy was actually a very, very well-built boy. He had a very sculpted body. And perhaps what was going on in his mind was, I mean, here is Swami, who is such a frail figure. He's so delicate. And, you know, yeah, Swami talking about spirituality is fine. But now imagine Swami giving a sermon to us on building muscles, you know. So to him, it seemed very strange. What we also should know is boys came from different backgrounds. Not everyone came from a really Sai background. So, you know, to this boy, everything seemed a little funny. He said, Swami giving us, you know, tips about building muscles. Look at how slender and how delicate he is. So all these things were going on in his mind. And suddenly, you know, nothing escapes the Lord's eyes. Swami suddenly asked, oh, so you all think I don't know anything about exercise. Actually, I mean, no one dared to own up that, you know, many were actually thinking like that. And then Bhagwan went on to speak at length about wrestling as it used to be practiced in the olden times. And as he was narrating all this, he suddenly looked at the boy, you know, that boy, that well-built boy who had smiled. And, you know, and Swami said, strength does not come from muscles. And again, looking straight into this boy's eyes, Swami asked, how strong are you? And Swami pointed to his arms. How strong are you? And it was like Swami was challenging him. You think you are really strong? Come, let's have a challenge. I mean, how often does one get chance to combat with Bhagwan? And this boy, he actually took it up. It was a lovely sight, with the boy on one side of the gymnastic bench and Swami on the other side, both locked in an arm wrestling duel. And the boy actually was trying to be careful, because, you know, he didn't want to hurt Bhagwan, because he felt Bhagwan is so delicate, you know. You don't want to at any point in time cause any pain to him. So he was trying to be very careful, but what he witnessed was something absolutely unexpected. I mean, within no time, you know, he saw that, oh my God, there was so much power. He didn't know how to withstand that, because his face was getting contorted, his jaw muscles were getting tightened, his every nerve was getting stiff. He was literally struggling with Bhagwan. But Bhagwan was, there was no pressure on his face. There was that benign smile as always. But the boy's veins were bulging out, his muscles were growing taut. He didn't know what to do. He actually now started pathetically looking at all the other boys. And the other boys could see that this guy really needed help. So another boy joined him. And, you know, now the intensity of the duel became more. Now more boys joined in that challenge with Bhagwan. And Bhagwan all the while was so cool. He was unruffled. And then as this was going on, the arm wrestling was going on, suddenly in one moment, bang, and everything went down. Everyone went down. All the boys, they realized their folly. They had realized, I mean, they had used all their strength, all their energy, and they could not move Bhagwan's hand even an inch. And now they thought, oh my God, you know, the one thought that was going on in their mind is, well, Swami is God, you know, no one can fight with Swami. You know, a moment ago they thought Swami is so frail and delicate, and they wanted to ensure that they don't get hurt, but now their physical pride was hurt. And of course, inside they were happy that, you know, they had such a unique experience with Bhagwan. I mean, they have witnessed a spectacle that is totally unprecedented and rare. And they were just recovering from it. And then Bhagwan just casually asked, so how was it? And immediately they said, Swami, you are God. If you will it, you can put the whole world down, Swami. And Swami immediately retorted, and Swami said, no, I have not come to put the whole world down. I have come to put the whole world up. I have come to raise the world, not to put down the world. But Bhagwan did not stop there. What Swami revealed next was truly such an eye-opener. Swami said, this was not a display of my divine strength. This is purely my physical strength. And this strength comes from my purity. From the day I came down to the planet till today, I have not done a single wrong deed. This is simply the power of my purity. There was no divine power used here. What a revelation. Nothing can stand up to the power of purity. When purity speaks, the whole world submits. So this was such a powerful experience to just tell us that there is something higher than the body. That is not the strength. Our strength is not just the body. Strength does not come only from the body. It comes from purity. It comes from something higher. The one you think you are, Swami says, is materialization. That is the gross. That is the earth element. You are created from earth. But Swami says, the one others think you are, that is vibration. That is not the body. That relates to the mind. So one way of understanding this, I think, is the way we vibrate depends on not what we think of ourselves, but more often than not, it depends on what we think of what others think of us, isn't it? We are all the time so concerned, so bothered, so worried about what others think of us, how others are perceiving us. If I have to do my daughter's marriage, you know, I want to do it in a prestigious and an upscale marriage hall, because otherwise, what will people think of me if I do it in a simple Kalyana Mandapam? So I don't do it because I want to give the best to my daughter. I do it because I want to be perceived by others as someone who is elite. I want all of them to say that, wow, this man, after all, is really rich. I want to have a grand feast, not because I want everyone to enjoy a nice, sumptuous, delicious meal on this day, but because I want everyone to say, wow, look at the items he has prepared. Oh my God, so many. We have never seen such a lavish fare of food before. I'm not thinking what people can eat, what they cannot eat. I want people just to be awe at what I can do. And they should go gaga about me. So this is a century where we are living our life not for ourselves, but so much all the time for others. In fact, perhaps 40-50% of our expenditure every month is just for this, for others. What gift to give so that others think good about us? What to wear so that others approve us? Which car to buy so that others think, you know, what kind of status we belong to? Even if if there are two people in the family or just three people in the family, and a small car will do. But I want to buy a Honda City, or I want to buy a Hyundai Amaze, because, you know, that's what everyone has, and I live in this colony, and this is what probably will add to my stature. I want to wear clothes not just which are comfortable. I want to wear those clothes in which others say I look good. You know, this is how most of the time our minds are obsessed with. The one you think you are in that stage we are obsessed with our body, so it relates to your physical self. The one others think you are, here we are obsessed with mind, but not our mind, we are obsessed with others' minds. All the time, isn't it? If I have sung well and, you know, if nobody complimented me, then I'm all the time thinking, oh, why did this person not compliment me? You know, last time I complimented when that other person sang, maybe this person is jealous of me, or maybe he thinks that I'm not good enough. Constantly we are thinking what others think of me. I sang well and that gave me joy. That has just gone out. That joy has just gone out. My whole point is why that other person didn't congratulate me. You know, we are constantly worried about what others are thinking about us. And that is what somehow these days that so much governs everything that we do, what we wear, what we talk, how we conduct, everything. In fact, in some societies, this has gone to an extreme. Other day, I read this interesting piece about a trend in Japanese society. In Japan, there are companies which provide what they call family rental service. So what this means is you can actually hire family, you can hire friends, you can hire a companion, you can hire literally anything and anyone. You can hire a son, a daughter, anyone. Everybody is available for a hire. So if somebody is getting married and you want to show to the bride's family that, you know, you have a lot of friends, so you can just hire 20 friends for a fee. So they will all behave like fake friends and they will, you know, they will have fun. So you can hire a fake brother, a fake sister, even a fake mother and father. There's someone who was marrying for the second time and he didn't want the guests of the first time to be there. So he just hired a completely different set of guests. So just so that you look good in front of others. So you want to hire a boss, someone who will come and praise you and pretend that he was your former boss. So you can hire literally everyone. So you're going out. So there is someone who hires four fake friends because when he goes out, he wants to take pictures and he wants to post them on Facebook because everyone posts such nice pictures on Facebook. So he hires friends. Someone is going out traveling. So he hires a fake partner. Because you just want to look good on the pictures. It's all acting. Everybody's acting. Just so that we are perceived as someone who's having a great life. Why is this happening? Because we are constantly comparing. We are constantly thinking what others are thinking about me. And you know, so you want to project that you have a great life, that you come from a great family. We are constantly comparison, and comparison is what leads to misery. And once you compare, then you have desire, and once you have, and once the desire starts, because, you know, until you compared, you never had the desire. You never thought that you needed a car until you saw that your friend who earns as much as you also has a car and felt, oh, I think I also need a car. Until 2 years ago, you were living in that house and everything was fine in that house. You were comfortable with your little family in the house. But then you saw that, you know, your wife's friend saw that there is a bigger house. They're living now, they're moving to a bigger house. And now you feel probably we also need a bigger house. Until then, you were so happy. You adjusted and it was perfectly fine. So we compare. So our problem is not that we don't have it. Our problem is that others have it and we don't have it. In a way, even when Bhagwan was there, it was the same. When it came to even interaction with Bhagwan, a devotee will feel bad when Swami did not speak to him. Not because Swami did not speak to him, but more because Swami spoke to the other person, but he did not speak to him. So why this happens is the one others think you are. We are so obsessed with others' minds. All because, and Swami said, this refers to the mind. This relates to the mind. The mind is constantly looking outside. In fact, many years ago, there was this boy who had this chance to travel with Bhagwan in the car, and he was sitting in the front seat, and Swami was going to one of these villages, the Bellathur village, is near Kadaguri, near Whitefield, and there was absolute silence in the car, And this boy who was sitting in the front, Swami was behind, and he thought, maybe we should have some conversation with Swami. You know, you have this chance to sit in the car with Swami. So he just looked behind and he saw that Swami was actually looking straight at him. And, you know, Swami was staring at him. So he turned back and absolutely there was no conversation. So he thought, you know, I should maybe start some small talk to break this silence and, you know, so and break his own nervousness. So he said, Swami, at night, Swami, when I sleep, I just don't get sleep. I keep thinking about you, Swami. I keep all the time praying to you. And Swami heard that and Swami said, all lies. You happily sleep. Not only you happily sleep, you actually snore. Don't tell me all this. And now this boy was caught red-handed in this futile attempt to engage Swami. And he didn't know what to do. Immediately changed topic and he said, Swami, Swami, how to control this mad mind, Swami? And Swami said, the easiest thing in this whole world is to control the mind. The most difficult thing in this world is not to control the mind, Swami said. And this boy was even more confused. I mean, the easiest thing in the world is to control the mind, really? And then Swami said, Chudura, see, he took his handkerchief and Swami held the cloth and said, all my fingers have to make so much effort to hold the handkerchief. It is so easy to let the handkerchief go. See, when the mind is running, if you try to catch it and control it, that is where the problem comes. It becomes even more difficult. That is the stress. That is the strain that you undergo. Because the mind control always wants to run. All you have to do is just let it run. You don't run after it. You just watch it like a witness. And then the mind will simply sit down. The mind will simply come back. The mind will just settle down. Just let it go. What is the mind? It is just this bundle of thoughts. Just like this handkerchief is made of so many threads. You remove each thread and there is no handkerchief left. It's the same with the mind. You don't run after the mind. So if we can control that, if we stop thinking about what others think of us, then we can move on to the next stage, Swami says, about the one you really are. So we have to move from the one what others think of me to becoming the one who thinks of others. And that's what Mahatma Gandhiji was, isn't it? He never wore more than a single piece of cloth on his body because there are so many who did not afford even that much. Someone who always thought of others. Other day I read this very interesting story about this young man in his 30s. He used to stand on the footpath opposite the famous Tata Cancer Hospital at Mumbai and he used to stare at the crowd in the front and he used to see how fear used to be written on the faces of all these patients standing, you know, because they are all standing at death's door in front of this cancer hospital and all their relatives equally having grim faces. And, you know, it disturbed him so much. And he thought, what is it that I can do? He had no money for medicines. He didn't have even food, money to give them food. And, you know, but he thought, I have to do something for these people. And this haunted him day and night. And then he found a way out. He rented out his own hotel that was doing good business at that point in time in front of the hospital. And he raised some money. And from these funds, he started a charitable activity right opposite the Tata Cancer Hospital on the pavement there. And he himself had no idea that, you know, this practice would be such a life changer for so many people. He just started providing free meals to these cancer patients and their relatives, and many people in the vicinity, they were so happy to see this. They came and they supported. So beginning with 50, the number of beneficiaries soon rose to 100, 200, 300. And the number of beneficiaries today soon reached 700 people as years rolled by. His activity continued, undeterred by the change of seasons, come winter, come summer, even the dreaded monsoon of Mumbai. He continued to serve. His name is Mr. Harak Chand Salva. He did not stop there. With time, he started supplying medicines to the needy. He started a medicine bank, enlisted volunteer services of 3 doctors and 3 pharmacists. He also started a toy bank to help the kids who are suffering from cancer. He started his own non-governmental organization. And now this organization runs 60 humanitarian projects. Mr. Salva is now 57 years old, but he works with the same vigor, the same energy, constantly thinking, what can I do for others? In the last 27 years, millions of cancer patients and their relatives have found God. They have found God in the form of Harakchand Salva. The one you really are. Other day I read another such beautiful story about Dr. Vishal Rao, an oncologist and head and neck surgeon from Bangalore. People who have throat cancer, many a times they lose their voice because their voice box have to be operated or removed. And he saw that so many people, you know, when they were not able to speak because of cancer, their life used to be so devastated. There were expensive treatments. I mean, you could have an artificial voice box, but it was very expensive. It was 20,000 rupees and it has to be changed every few months. A poor man was not in a position to afford such costly equipments. So he thought, can I do something for them? So with the help of another friend who was an engineer, they developed a voice prosthesis, which is just rupees 50. And he called it Om voice prosthesis, because he says Om is the first sound that resonated across the universe. And now, once people regain their voice, it's like they have again found sound, and that's why he called it Om voice prosthesis. And this is just rupees 50, just $1 voice box. The watchman, a watchman there who had lost his voice because of his habit of tobacco, and now he's got his voice back. And for all these people, Vishal Rao truly is Vishal, someone who has a large heart, someone who moved from what others think of me to how I can think of others. That is what will take us to the next step, who we really are. Many years ago, in the early years, you know, especially in the 70s, students used to spend a lot of time in the mandir premises because they did not want to miss a single moment with Bhagwan. So besides the regular darshan and bhajan sessions, Bhagwan would emerge at any time and no one could predict Bhagwan. In fact, those unexpected opportunities of proximity, you know, those were the very sweetest moments, because you don't know what will that moment will bring to you, because it is just that unexpected time with Bhagwan. So one afternoon, you know, a student had this strong urge of going into the mandir. It was 2 p.m. In those days, Bhagwan would sometimes come out at that hour too. Swami is living in the Prashantinilayam mandir, where the sanctum sanctorum is. Swami lived there till 1993. So this boy went inside the bhajan hall. It was the month of November. The birthday preparations had begun, and the silver decoration in the altar was being polished. So there was this big photo of Bhagwan, which was moved from the shrine and kept below on a side wall. So as the student watched all this, you know, to his sheer surprise, Bhagwan suddenly stepped in. There was no one there except this few workmen, you know, who were polishing the silver statues there. And this boy was so happy that, you know, he had just that urge to come to the mandir that day. And imagine his blessing. Swami also stepped into the hall. And, you know, he thanked his stars for that priceless blessing that had come his way. And Bhagwan started speaking to the artisans. And after spending 10-15 moments with them, Bhagwan was now walking back. And then this boy's eyes, you know, obviously it is glued to Bhagwan. And as Swami was walking out, suddenly Swami looked at this boy and he turned towards this boy. And this boy at that point in time was standing next to that big photo of Bhagwan, which was brought down from the altar. And he saw, to his utter amazement, Swami now started walking towards him. And there was a very beautiful smile on Swami's face. So he was so happy Swami was walking towards him. He was so joyous. And as Bhagwan came near, Swami looked at the boy and then looked at this picture of him. Swami saw that picture top to toe and then keenly looked at this boy. And Swami asked, "Hey, who is the one in the photograph?" And the boy immediately said, "Swami, Swami, it is you, Swami." And Swami again asked, "Who is he to you? Who is the one in the photo to you?" And I mean, what do you say? Swami is telling, "Tell me, who is that one in the photo to you?" The boy was a little perplexed. So, a few days ago, Swami had mentioned in his discourse that, each one of us should develop a very personal relationship with Swami. Swami said, it could be father, mother, friend, anything. Develop a relationship with God. All that Swami had said. So, unable to make up his mind, the boy said, Swami, my everything. The one who is in the photo, he's my everything. And Bhagwan nodded his head. And he said, "No, no, no." The boy didn't know. What is it that he said? That was not appropriate. Why is Swami not approving this? Swami said, "No. You are he," Swami said. Swami said, "You are he. You are the one who is there in the photo. You are not different." That is the message that Swami was giving him. He said that and Swami quietly walked away. Well, there is never a casual moment in the life of an avatar. The supreme teacher will use every opportunity to instill that highest thought in our mind. And that's why even one moment with the avatar is enough to liberate us. And Swami was saying that, we are not human beings. As they say, we are not human beings having divine experiences, but we are divine beings having human experiences. And we have to realize this. We have to live this idea in our lives. Because once we live this in every breath of our lives, that is when we will perceive divinity all the time around us. I told you before, socialists say that we are mere human. Psychologists will say that we are not mere human. Yeah, okay, there is something beyond the body. But the prophets always told us that we are not just human, we are part divine. We are part divine. But when the divine comes, the divine says, "You are nothing but divine. You are divine. You are me. You are me." That is what Bhagwan says, the one you really are. The one you think you are, that relates to the body. The one others think you are, that relates to the mind. The one you really are, that relates to what you are truly, and that is, you are divine, you are me. This is what Swami is telling. Now, who is divine? As Swami said, there is no other better definition of divine than love. A love that is so unconditional, so ceaseless, that it can envelop the whole world with its intensity and purity. So Swami says, you are neither the body nor the mind. You are the embodiment of the Atma. The body and the mind are just mere instruments. Do not forget your divinity. If we cannot become God, we can at least become godly. We cannot become the sun, but we can become a candle. We can also give light. We can give warmth. We can give ideas. We can give inspiration. We can support. We can definitely be that where God vibrates, where God resonates. Swami says, the one you really are is radiation. That is what we have to radiate. We have to radiate that light, that warmth, that positivity, that goodness. And how to become this? Is there a way? Is there a method to this? What is the best way to attain this? What is the best way to be what we truly are? What is the surest way? What is the shortest way? Well, Swami has mentioned about this also, and probably in the next episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, I will dwell a little more on this journey of 3-1. Today we discussed about what it really means. The one you think you are, what the one others think you are, and the one you really are. But how to be the one you really are? Is there a shortcut? Is there a way that is guaranteed? Is there a way that we can all follow, wherein there is a method to it, and we can very easily attain this goal? Swami has given a very beautiful formula, and I will share about this in the next episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Before I leave you, very beautiful song. Let me play this. It's part of a drama. But this song, in a way, encapsulates what we came to towards the end of this discussion. What is divinity? Divinity is love. We have to become that love. And this song is all about that. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with me. And if you have any queries or comments on this program, this is just my understanding. Maybe there are so many perspectives to what I have shared. Please feel free to share your thoughts. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org, or if you want to write anything personally to me, you can write to Bishu, B-I-S-H-U, Bishu@radiosai.org. I look forward to your comments so that we can learn together, so that we can be that love that Swami wants us to be. We can walk on this journey from 3 to 1 together and be that which will make our Lord proud, so that one day we don't distinguish ourselves from Sai, we become Sai. Let me leave you with this beautiful song, and I'll come back to it and explain more in detail in the next episode of Outside Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरी ज्योति का विस्तार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरे श्रोत का ही प्रकार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ प्यार हूँ मैं अधिक शुद्र हूँ मैं विशाल हूँ कोई भाव हूँ मैं खयाल हूँ कोई गीत ही अविराम हूँ प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ Yeah.